Com.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania, also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
Oh, the drama. I love the intro, by the way.
I do, too.
Another edition of The Lawyer's Edge, and I'm Roger Henderson, not an attorney, with Robert Slama, who is, as the intro mentioned, member of the Florida Bar, which means you practice statewide, offices in Jacksonville, as well as
Fort Myers,
and you're on the Supreme Court Bar Association?
I'm a member of the federal bar locally, which includes the Middle District of Florida.
Okay.
But also, I was sworn into the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Okay. All right. Well, another edition of The Lawyer's Edge, talking about legal issues. And what's on the agenda for today, Robert?
Well, a couple of things. One is, I want to let everyone know, please go to the Facebook page. There's a lot of information to find there on issues that are going on, as well as things we talked about. So you go to The Lawyer's Edge, look in Facebook, look up The Lawyer's Edge, and you'll see information there. Also, we've been litigating in and out of the various courts, and on the Facebook page, you will also see an update on David Trotty's case and he was put back on the ballot the other day. Today, we want to talk a little bit about where we left off the other day. We were talking a little bit about retainers, and I know for most people, this is where they don't usually have a very good understanding of how to retain counsel. And I know that should sound a little bit odd.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you go to the store, you're going to, say, Lowe's, you're going to buy something. You know what you're doing.
Okay.
Most people have an accountant. They know how to go in and get an accountant. Pretty straightforward. Doctor, you know what that's, if you can figure out medical billing, one day you clue me in as to what's going on with medical
right.
bills. But when it comes to a lawyer, uh-huh. here's why it's different. Depending upon the type of case, depending upon what all is involved, and depending upon the direction that you're going to be going, sometimes it starts out going left. After the other side comes in, it goes right. You don't know in the beginning when you meet with someone where the case is going to go. All I know is what Roger tells me today.
But you also have a general idea, am I not true, Robert, what type of legal area it is. For example, if you've been charged with some type of criminal offense, you know, and you want to maintain your innocence, that's a different type of law than someone who needs a contract for a real estate transaction.
Sure.
Right. But lawyers are not allowed to say that they specialize. Am I correct?
Those words you can't say. What you can say is, if you're board certified in an area, that I'm board certified in civil law,
okay,
appellate law, whatever it is.
All right.
But so people, if they do say that, they shouldn't say that.
Okay. All right. So where does someone start, depending on the type of legal help they need? And a lot of your practice has to do with family law.
And criminal.
Okay.
Bankruptcy, foreclosure defense.
Okay.
Civil rights, which is very few people who do civil rights. And medical mal and personal injury.
Okay.
So it goes like this. For example, if you were injured in an auto accident, the type of retainer you're going to look at requires nothing from you. It's what we call a contingency fee agreement.
Right. In other words, that's almost in a way of speaking, you don't have to write a check to the lawyer. The lawyer gets paid after you settle or have to sue in court, provided the case is successful, right?
That's correct. So in other words, we're paying the costs up front,
okay,
which is the only case we can do that in. So we'll get into that as we talk about the others. I'm also doing another thing for you. I'm not only advancing the costs, but I'm also working for free for the moment. At the end of the case, I'm being paid in accordance with the contract, which is approved by the Florida Bar. And it's all of this is out there online. So if you have been involved in an accident, that's how the case is going to move.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, though, Roger, as you said, I like the reference to some sort of what we call in the law transactional work. People who deal with transactional attorneys, such as real estate, a lot of corporate stuff is transactional.
Okay.
They will pay for services based on the person's hourly rate for a specified product, which is easy for them. So in other words, if someone comes into me and says, I would like to do a real estate closing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The real estate closing is going to be a flat amount, and usually it runs about $350 to $450, $500, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason they do, by the way, this may be a newsflash to some people. Do you know why they charge such a low fee? A, they're doing volume, most of them. And second is...
They already have the templates, all they have to do is put in your name, right?
Yes, to a certain extent.
Okay.
But it's this. They're getting what we call the title gravy. Do you know what that means?
No. What is that?
The attorney also is listed with the title insurance. So very often, they are splitting and getting, he is getting paid a percentage of the cost on the title insurance.
Ah, okay.
Which is, as you know, if you've looked at the title insurance, it's rather expensive. They're getting part of that money. So we call it in the business, and I'm not just I'm not a real estate closing agent. I do it,
mm-hmm.
but I do it for friends and people who want it done, you know, individually. You're getting a pretty good clip off of that. So between the title gravy and the fee, they're making a pretty decent amount for an individual closing. Now, let's get to something that's not, quote, transactional. This is where everything changes when you're looking at litigation. Take family law. The typical person walks in and says, as I jokingly always say, I want a good divorce. What does that mean? Well, I'm reasonable. I just want things done quickly. I don't want to pay much money. If there's any money to pay, I want him to pay it. And by the way, I want to be done yesterday. Can you do that for me? Yeah, I can, but it's not going to happen like that. Why? Because real life doesn't happen like that. It does on occasion, maybe 2-3% of the time, but it typically doesn't. So what happens? Roger, you communicate to me what your goals are, such as you want the majority time sharing, you want the house, you want temporary alimony, you want exclusive use and enjoyment of the car, you want the pets. Pets can become an issue in a case. And you also want the other side to service all of the debt commensurate with their percentage of the income. So pretty simple. Now here's what happens. We serve the person. They come back. They respond. And they say, oh, no, I want the majority time sharing. I want the house. I want the kids. I want the car. I want the dog. Guess where we are right now? You're in a full-blown, everything is contested now. What does that mean? Your cost from when you just came in to see me and said, oh, no, I think he's going to be in agreement with much of this. And he's the one who is the major wage earner, and you're over here with very little savings. You have to understand, I see people who the spouse gives them money, but they don't even have access to an account.
Hmm.
They have nothing. How do they begin waging a battle to try to get their relief? Plus, they have no money to afford an attorney.
Hmm.
You'd be surprised the people that are in that place. And we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. But I'm telling you, these are real issues, real problems, but you have to understand it before you get going. We're talking to you on the Lawyer's Edge.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge. I'm Roger Henderson along with Robert Slama. We're talking about the law and learned a little bit different types of ways of paying for legal services, whether it be the contingency. That's if there is an accident. I guess it would apply also to medical malpractice.
Yes.
Okay.
Those types of cases, personal injury,
right.
Med-mal, where they are what I call classic contingency. The reason is, just
right.
as an aside,
uh-huh.
the attorney cannot have a stake in the case. So in other words, I have people who come in and will say something like this. Well, this is a foreclosure case. This is a, you know, a automobile, a car issue. Can't you just kind of take a lien or get paid out of the proceeds of this case? It's different, as you can see, in a matter involving your accident. I'm not part of your accident.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
But here, where you have a house, a car, a boat, and then saying the thing that is the subject matter of the litigation, you would become a debtor to me in this case. So at the very same time I'm suing, say, Roger over the boat, then you want me to get paid out of the boat, like the boat being sold afterwards, and then I get a percentage of the boat. You see the problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm also a creditor of yours because now you're giving me an interest in the boat, which is the very thing we're fighting over. So I'm just saying, people don't think about it that way, but sometimes people will say that. And of course, if you ever go to an attorney who's going to take collateral, your stuff, please turn around and run. Run as fast as you possibly can to get out of that place, okay? Because they shouldn't do it. So anyway, when you come in then and you're in the case that I gave you, the family law case, the person feels overwhelmed. They're like, but you don't understand. I don't really have access to the money. He keeps all the accounts, which just does happen. I've seen, and just like recently, someone in a 24-year marriage that he just gives her a distribution, like a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there. She doesn't know what's in his accounts. She doesn't have access to the accounts. She never did.
What about when tax time comes around and she has to sign the papers on what they made?
See, you know what the same people do is?
What?
They don't let them see the W-2. They really don't look at or review the documents in most cases. They just show them the last page, say sign.
And in a perfect world, that'll be okay because you love and trust one another. And, you know, this guy, you know, who I've, you know, we've pledged our love to one another and I can trust him with anything. And I can sign it, but sadly, unfortunately, things don't always work out, huh?
No, and in that instance, you may have put yourself on the hook by signing that thing, particularly without reading it and knowing what the sources of income are, putting yourself in bad places. Now, there are provisions for what we call innocent spouse. That wasn't my direction today, but I'm just saying this is how this can happen. So when it comes to fees, what the law says is, it's supposed to be based on disparity in income. So, yeah, let's say he makes $90,000, you make $35,000. That's a factor of 2 times. You would be a very good candidate for reimbursement or contribution for attorney's fees based upon what we call the disparity in income. Another way you're looking at getting compensated for this is if there is, aside from disparity, there's what we call bad faith litigation. Now, bad faith means someone is litigating over issues that in the end really have no bearing or relevance, or at least on your facts, where you've already assented to certain relief, such as, let's say you said, I'm in agreement with much of what you've asked for. And so I send you a letter and I say, Roger, we're in agreement with this, 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 and this. You turn around and disagree with the one item, which is really the only item left. Let's say it's the use of the car.
Okay.
But what you end up doing is now not just litigating over the car while I've said I'm good with everything else, you turn around and say, well, since you didn't agree to the car, I'm litigating everything. I'm litigating time sharing. I'm litigating exclusive use and possession of the home. I'm litigating everything. Now, do people do that? They most certainly do. Now, when
Is that legal?
It is. Okay. Subject to, if I see that going on, the first thing I'll tell the client is, let's set a status conference. And at the status conference, I show the judge. The judge is not supposed to get involved in settlement. But what I tell him is, look, judge, we got a problem here. And again, this is why when I tell people skill and savvy, experience, most people don't know how to, and you've heard me use these words before, manage the course to save you time, money, and help get you where you're going. An attorney without experience would look at that and say, oh, well, that's what he's doing, and you're going to have to pay the money, and we're going to have to fight and go down the road. They don't know any better. What I would do is, and have, I do a status conference, go to the judge and say, judge, we're not trying to get you involved in negotiations. But before we get involved in bad faith litigation here, we've set forth that we agree to a number of issues. We disagree with the one issue. So I think going forward, our litigation should be confined to the one issue. Now, the judge can say to the other side, are you in agreement with that? Now, let's say, and this happens too, they look the judge dead in his eyes and say, we're not in agreement with the other four. We're going to contest and fight everything, right? Everything. What happens in that instance? You end up going through litigation, spending a lot of money, spending a lot of time, doing a lot of things. At the end of it, guess what happens?
You end up having to pay a lot more money in legal fees, I would imagine.
And wasted time and wasted energy. Then what I do is when I file my motion for attorney's fees and costs and for so-called bad faith litigation and for them to pay all this extra time, now I can pull out I couldn't before in front of the judge because of the questions that were asked. I take out my piece of paper and I show my email and say, here's where we offered this. You came back and said, we're in agreement with all of this except the car. Then what did you do? You ended up fighting over everything.
Right.
Okay. Now it's up to the judge whether he determines that that is, quote, bad faith litigation. I believe it is. I believe, hopefully, most judges would believe that it is. And then you ask them, all of this litigation, all of this cost, I show them all my hours, all my time, and say, pay her back or pay him back. Women, men, they both do it to each other. My point is...
Or the attorney directly or no?
Oh, yeah. Can be, depending upon where you are. But I mean... So here's the problem I'm trying to get everyone to see. So if Roger comes in and he has $3,500, but...
You really like using me in these divorce examples.
Because you're solid as a rock.
Exactly.
And the person on the other side has got three times the money you have to spend on this. So at the end, here's what the problem is for poor Roger is. Roger's sitting in the chair going, but she can spend... $9,500, $20,000, and has to bury me. But then what does that do with your relationship with me, Roger? I mean, that's what I'm trying, because I'm trying to get you in the seat of what I call real life is. Now, you're sitting there going, wait a minute. Let's think about this. Because she's spending $20,000, she's now increased the litigation. I want to keep you as my attorney, and I don't want to get buried. But because she's willing to spend $20,000, I only have $35,000. What do I do? What do you do, Roger? That's it. Oh, it's a whole different seat now, isn't it? What do you do? Your kids, your house, your car, your dog is sitting there. Do you know how many times the scenario I just said happens every day? And the person is sitting there going, first of all, I didn't think legal stuff could be that expensive. I'm like, you have no idea. Typical custody, you're looking at $20,000 to $35,000. That's without an appeal.
Hmm.
Without an appeal. But
where does the average person come from? They mortgage the house? I mean, where do they get the money?
Family, friends. Hmm. Some people have money set aside. All these kinds of
draining
things.
Draining the 401k?
Taking loans from the 401k.
Hmm.
You better believe it. And money that people, knowing this was coming, they start setting little bits of money aside. They put money aside. They put money aside. And then when it comes time to blow the hatch, like on TV, boom, the grenade goes off. What do? She's ready, but you weren't because you had no idea it was coming.
I have heard that in some cases that people know that this is coming. So one of the first things they do just before a divorce happens is that they... one of the spouses will quit their jobs in order to reduce their
exposure.
Their exposure to liability.
It can help. I mean, in some instances, it can help, and you can still look to impute income. But I mean, just the so what do we do? Here's where then what we have to figure out is how we're going to manage this. It ranges from we can file a motion for interim fees, meaning I tell the judge he's paying $20,000. Or she is, in my instance, with you. You had $3,500 up front. You can come up with another $2,000, which is $55,000. And now we're looking for him to or her to contribute money to help equalize because the law says you both have to have equal access to the courts. But it doesn't say, based on financial ability to pay, that it's going to be perfectly equal. But I can ask for the court to say, give Roger... another
or whoever it may be, not necessarily
right,
me.
Right. Of course. Another $10,000, another $5,000. Sometimes it's $2,000, but it's something.
Mm-hmm.
But my point for you is people get locked up here and think, well, there's nothing I can do. I'm just kind of stuck. No. Before you get involved in this, you're going to have to come up with some money because the litigation, depending upon who you're dealing with and what their goals are, may be different than yours. So there you go. So how much can this cost? It can cost anywhere from low end, a very low end amount, all the way up to, $50,000, $100,000, depending upon what all's involved, how wealthy the parties are, income, and all that. But I'm saying the typical divorce, and just using divorce as an example, you're going to be looking at $2,500 to $3,500 to start,
mm-hmm.
and from there. Depending upon the issues, depositions, litigation, how far it goes, how many hearings, all this sort of thing, may run $20,000, $25,000. Now, a usual one where people play nice, they don't over litigate the issues, they go through 4 to 6 months, whatever. You know, the usual process, get your usual stuff done, go to mediation, resolve the case short of trial. You're probably going to average. $6,000 to $9,000, somewhere in there.
Mm.
If you have everybody in agreement, you have to draft the papers, do a little bit of back and forth discovery, and then go to mediation. Probably $4,000, mm. $5,000.
Do you ever? Obviously, you're talking about hourly rates that attorneys' offices charge. Generally, do you ever hear cases where lawyers take a flat fee? And it covers it, any and every eventuality?
Yeah, that was the next thing we were going to get to is, in a flat fee, you can, depending upon what the scenario is. So, for example, if someone comes in and says, the two of us have everything worked out, the issues, which they never fully do, but we have most of the issues worked out. Everything is straight. We need you to draft the papers, put it together, and walk us into court. Yeah, we could flat fee that. And if it turns out, as it'll say in the retainer, that you guys disagree and don't reach a full agreement, and end up having to go to court, then you kick into either an additional retainer. We have what we call people use a single tier, double tier, triple tier retainer. So it all works that way. There's different ways of doing it. I'm just saying the business end is going to depend upon the parties, how you guys are litigating, what your issues are, what your interests are.
Okay.
It's all different.
Very interesting information that we're learning today with Robert Slom, attorney at law. You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge here on AM 600, FM 101.1 WBOV.
Talk radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM. WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. On Capitol Hill, Senate leaders are expressing cautious optimism about the Singapore summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Meanwhile, military affairs analyst, retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis, is noting that in the weeks leading up to the summit, Kim did meet with China's President Xi Jinping and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, both of whom he refers to as the puppet masters over Kim Jong-un, so it's no telling whether he is sincere about following through on the promises made at the summit, and says the U.S. will have to be cautious in the follow-up to that meeting. U.S. consumer prices rose 0.2% in May. Surging gasoline prices drove much of that rise, and with core prices moving up only slowly, the Federal Reserve is now expected to once again raise interest rates, at least slightly, tomorrow. That would be for the second time this year. On Wall Street right now, the Dow down 51 points. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Jennifer Candelino for Snyder Air Conditioning. Should you repair or replace your air conditioning system? It's a question that our customers ask us every day. So Snyderman has put together a short quiz to help you make your own decision. Just log on to SnyderAC.com, take the short quiz, and decide for yourself. Repair or replace? Your answer will become very clear. And our repair or replace quiz is easy. Simply log on to SnyderAC.com and answer the five short questions. There's a reason that Snyder Air Conditioning has been Jacksonville's leading air conditioning company for over 40 years, with the highest quality products and only honest and reliable workmanship. Every Snyder technician has been certified and professionally trained and committed to 100% customer satisfaction. At Snyder, they know you expect your comfort needs to be fixed right the first time. So log on to SnyderAC.com today and take the short quiz. Repair or replace. Call Snyderman today at 641-0600. License number CAC 1813307.
Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church, invites you to worship with them. 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study. 10:45 a.m. Sunday, expository preaching of God's Word. 7 p.m. Sunday, expository preaching of God's Word. 7 p.m. Wednesday, Bible Q&A with fellowship meal. They're located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road in the heart of Mandarin, just 1 mile south of I-295.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge, and I just want to remind everyone again on the Facebook page. If you go to on Facebook and do a search, The Lawyer's Edge, you'll find our webpage, which will have information on there regarding many of the topics we talk about, giveaways, as well as information which is of use to you. Finishing up on the discussion here Roger and I were having, you know, oftentimes people will look at a high publicity divorce. You know, Michael Jordan, when he was going through a divorce, as an example. Tiger Woods may be one of the more recent, got a lot of attention. People followed it very closely. And they look at that and they say, well, you know, they're rich and they're throwing out a lot of money. You know, the fees in that case, certainly on each side, I'm sure was well over $100,000, probably close to $250,000. And so people think of themselves in the general sense as they begin or embark on this, given what their goals are, how much should this cost? Well, to help you this way, think about this. Of the usual issues that one will get into, if there are children, it's going to be all of the what I call the children's issues. So if there is not agreement on time sharing, then everything is in play. The whole ball is in play. So what does that mean? It means you might have a social background investigation done. If there are any allegations of abuse, drinking, any of this stuff, someone's going to file that motion, likely, and a social background investigation done. That investigation alone can cost $3,500 or more. Sometimes less if you're just using an attorney who is otherwise qualified, or if you're using or wanting someone like Dr. Yates, Bloomfield, you're going to be looking at a minimum $3,500 for a psychiatrist being part of the or a psychologist being part of the evaluation. So that's just to start. Now you've got the what we call the custody interrogatories. You have to put together a package, and that package is a whole bunch of information to go with the social background investigation, to go to the social background investigator. For what purpose? To make a determination on what their recommendation is to the court on what the time sharing should be. So this is like a mini trial in the case of in the middle of your case during the discovery process for you eventually to then provide to the court at trial if you don't settle the case at mediation. The cost of that, the attorney's time, the cost of the social background investigator, plus the interrogatories, the discovery, subpoenas, you know, you're already going to be up around $15,000 or more just going through that. So that's why hopefully you can understand when you say, well, this is my goal. It's not just what your goal is. It depends on whether the other side is in agreement as to what the cost is going to be for pursuing that goal. And of course, as I've said before, you may start out in the beginning thinking you're in agreement, but it changes. And as it changes, your costs can go drastically from this to that. And that's, unfortunately, that's part of the process. And then your claim for reimbursement coming at the end of the case may be an interim shot, but most likely at the end of the case. So you're going to have to fund the party to pursue that goal. So that's a little bit about the usual dynamics that we find in family litigation. The other, take something like criminal defense. Typically, that is going to be more, as Roger was alluding to before, if you're looking at as a flat fee. Like, for example, in a first DUI, the fee is likely going to be about $3,500. If it's a second DUI, that's going to be $5,000 or $6,000. Depends upon whether or not there was an automobile crash. So now we have a DUI with property damage. If you're going to be filing a lot of motions, which in DUI cases is sometimes necessary, challenging the breathalyzer, challenging the stop itself, plus dealing with a DMV appeal on the initial suspension of your license, all of that's extra. All of that's, you know, going to be money on top. So a DUI case, depending upon whether it's a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, jail time, property damage, not property damage, sometimes there's a felony attached to it for fleeing and eluding, so you're in court with that. So it all depends. That's why it's very important when you start out that you understand as you go in for consultations or otherwise, defining what your goals are, what you're trying to achieve, but doing so within the context, you know, of what you think ultimately you can afford or what you can come up with. It all affects the goal. Now, the next step, I think, which is important as you're selecting or starting to select an attorney, well, one is their care, their involvement, how the case is going to proceed. You're first interested in their level of expertise. Now, their expertise, let me tell you something, online, and understand, for example, with Facebook. These days, online, you have a number of things that are operating out there. You've got things, some call it it's your window to the world, or your door to your business. But people are putting information out there. It's very important, I think, aside from what you see online, some of that information is embellished, some of it not true, some of it is written in such a way that may or may not even reflect the experience that you're going to have. It's important to meet, have an interview, and as you do, set out what your goals are and ask the person, what is your plan for how we can go about this, given the cost, the structure, and what would you do and how would you do it? If someone doesn't know the answer to that question specifically, I understand discovery and things are going to come later, but how they've gone about this in the past and how they're going to go about it and what they expect the experience to look like and what the issues are going to be, very important, very, very important. Second is, understand the cost structure and how it's going to proceed. You should get a written retainer and understand what that retainer says and how things are going to proceed. And then, of course, third is, at what stage or stages is additional money going to be due? And you talk about the business end. So the first part is understanding the relationship, their level of experience. Certainly ask how many trials they've had in various areas, depending upon whether it's custody, whether it's a DUI, whether it's a civil case. How many verdicts have they had? What is their real experience? And, of course, in a firm, who's going to be handling the case? You may see someone on TV and their face is all over it, but you're never going to, in many firms, you're never going to see that person other than seeing you in the beginning, saying hi to you. Once you're retained, off they go. Their experience level and appeals and whatever else they've done. Very, very important to help you come up with the person who you want to help you and take you through this. Online, as I said on the Lawyer's Edge on the Facebook page, I like to put stuff out there to help educate you about things that are going on, issues that are happening, giveaways, as I said, that we'll do here from time to time for golf or other things, and to give you an opportunity to help improve your knowledge. Because everybody, one thing in this world that we're all going to, ultimately, we're going to interface with is the law in some capacity, whether it's a traffic ticket, to a divorce, to possibly a DUI or a car accident, being involved in a car accident, defending against a car accident. I have clients, corporate clients, in a small business. You have all kinds of issues that you are faced with, including things that will range from civil litigation, being sued over disputes, defending against disputes, collections actions, all sorts of things. And if you're a priest or you're a pastor and you're out there, you have issues as well that tend to gravitate towards pastors, things that need to be addressed. Oftentimes, it can range from matters regarding pastors' pay. Oftentimes, with the IRS, that gets becomes a problem depending upon how they did it, including the parsonage, all kinds of things. So everybody has something that they're usually interacting with. And then let's not forget this one. Probate. Someone dies. The case goes to probate. I do probate as well as wills and estates. Probate these days is also a little bit more challenging at times because assets are missing. Families aren't communicating. I just got through with a depo last week in a case with one of the relatives. There were issues as to what happened with, you know, the mother in her last days, which potentially could lead to a malpractice case. There are issues regarding individual assets and where they go, and rings and jewelry, all kinds of stuff. So litigation is there. Each of the retainers are based upon your specific scenario and much of what needs to be done in order to remedy whatever the problems are that are unique most of the time to your case. So it's not easy to say, well, my friend, my uncle, my sister did this or that. Their case, in the end, may be nothing like yours. So anyway, we're here to help you. And on the Lawyer's Edge, my goal is to help educate and inform and help you understand the legal world that you live in and to help you make wise decisions so you don't end up losing or becoming a victim in the legal system. We're going to be back shortly. You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama. Welcome back. You're listening to A Lawyer's Edge with David Trotty and Robert Slama, and we're still talking about this issue because it puts things in the court system at odds with themselves.
Yeah, during the break, we were talking about a gatekeeper, and a lot of our or what a gatekeeper would do in this situation. I think a lot of our judges do a really good job, at least up in Northeast Florida, with attempting to provide access to resources for children that have special needs or parents that have issues parenting, whether it's a high conflict class that's needed or whether it's disciplinary classes that are needed. But a lot of our judges have sheets and have pamphlets that they provide to the parents. However, we might as well have a board outside of each courtroom that have these pamphlets, because all that is just information. You know, we have cannon fodder going around with what does this do, what does that do, who do we talk to, how much does it cost, all those questions in our mind. But let me flip over to what United Way does with the veterans. They have a program called Mission United, and they're investigating it up here and kind of doing a study up in Northeast Florida whether or not this is a good area to implement a Missions United. And what that Missions United is it's a gatekeeper, and you basically would call their phone number, and you would say, hey, I have this issue in this situation. We're talking about veterans. They would call and they say, hey, we need a wheelchair. This guy's wheelchair broke. We need a new wheelchair. What do you have? Well, the person at Missions United, the caseworker, would say, you know what? We might have 47 resources in Jacksonville regarding veteran service organizations. And you know what? These two handle wheelchairs. And it's not, hey, call this number. It's, hold on 1 second. And they get on the phone with those specific resources, and they say, we have a veteran in need of a wheelchair. Do you have one? Yes, we do. All right. I'm going to have Joe, the veteran, call Mark, the service officer, service organization, to get that wheelchair. What time can you do it? Tomorrow at 12 o'clock. All right. And they actually, that gatekeeper, that caseworker, actually sets the appointment up, gets the specific need accomplished. Now, we're talking about veterans, and we're talking about veterans' needs. That's what we're trying to develop here in Jacksonville through the Veterans Council and hopefully United Way if they come in and implement Mission United. Now, if we take that same concept to children with special needs or children in general when it comes to divorces, we could develop a gatekeeper in Jacksonville that has all the child development resources, kind of, you know, a Rolodex of all of them, specific names and numbers and what resources they provide, what resources they can't provide or don't want to provide. And we talk to them and get them on the same page. So when we have a seminar or we talk to our courts and our attorneys, we educate our attorneys so we can better educate our clients in divorce situations. We have a child with autism. What's needed? Not just a seminar we go to for CLEs and we learn about how autism, how children affected with autism are affected by divorce. Not just that, but what resources are available in our area that we can put a finger on and a name on, and a time on, and a cost on, so we can instruct our clients on how to navigate that system instead of just having a pamphlet. I just don't think pamphlets work.
No,
it helps the printing companies.
It does, and you know, you look at the wall like you go to certain doctor's offices.
I don't even know what I'm staring at. The ones that have the big ones that have like 40 pamphlets, I don't know what it is. But here's where I'm going with this is, and you hit it on the head, is it's resource management. But it's also, you know what I wish our cases would start coming, would turn into, or they should be about? First, the court, through resources and assistance, and those assistance can come from different places, to first identify what, like an IEP at school, an IEP, an individualized educational plan. This is what the child's needs are, not hypothetically, this Trotty, this person, David Trotty's son, my son, this is what his needs are. Then the parents at a trial or hearing or as they move along, how are you telling the court how you're best going to meet those needs for that child? What can you do, David Trotty, to provide for the needs that have now been objectively identified for that child?
Well, you know the answer to that is each one of our clients, let's say you have spouse A and I have spouse B. Well, spouse A is going to run to the courtroom and say, I've always done this. I'm going to do it. I want to manage it because spouse B cannot manage it. But then what happens after the gavel lands? What happens? She's drowning in her responsibilities with that child, and the child falls off. Okay? That's the problem, is it's that we've got to get our parents off the control wagon, trying to control the situation, and train them to try to work together. And I think in my experience with the children with special needs, our parents will generally work together because one is kind of checking out, but he understands the situation, is my experience. But you are right. There are some that when they check out, they're nowhere around, and one spouse is left carrying the whole burden for the child with special needs.
And it's a lot.
But I'm telling you, it's hard. I'm a single parent of one child. One child. It is hard to raise him as a single father. Now, his mom is very, very involved. Bless her heart. She's a great mom. But the time I have with him, it's hard to manage. And I'm sure the time he's with her, it's hard to manage. She's a teenager. Well, they're all teenagers. We know how we were when teenagers. But imagine, I could not imagine what some of my clients go through and where these ladies are working two jobs. They're raising three kids. The dad isn't around. And these are amazing women. They're making it happen. They're getting degrees. They're feeding their kids. They're bathing their kids. The kids are in sometimes private schools through scholarships or whatever resources they've been able to dig up. But these ladies and gentlemen who are raising their kids by themselves with no help from a second parent, you know, my hat's off to you. But if you have a child with special needs, it takes probably two villages to help you out.
Three and a half or four, maybe five.
Exactly. And so when we as attorneys have a client that comes in with a child with special needs, if we are in the instant that they come in for that consultation saying, we're going to seclude you, you're the only parent that can help this child. And we start throwing those rocks at the other camp, saying he's not around, he's never been around, he's not going to help. And I'm not talking about the cases where they actually aren't around, but where the other spouse has been to work and the one staying at home, well, now you're getting a divorce now, both parents are going to have some time with this child. It needs to be reaching out to the other camp and saying, hey, let's get some smoke signals going out here. What are we going to do here to help this child?
Then that's what I mean, David, is, for example, in special needs, the curriculum, and not just in special needs, I'm talking about across the board.
Right.
I would have classes, things, tasks for each of the parents before you get to final hearing. This is how you avoid this problem. You can't completely, but to certainly what I call putting them on jump street. David says, I want to do all this. Okay, great. Let's give him a test period to see what he really will do. Isn't that what we do this in jobs? We call it probation.
A breaking period, yes.
I put you in there for 90 days and see what you really can do. I look at your resume. Can you do half the things you've said? Can you do any of the things you've said, which I've had that myself? So we don't have a trial program. Why not?
Well, that's because in these situations, I had this case just wrapped up. Almost 190 days, the guy did not see his kids. Ranting and raving, there was issues. End of the day, settlement, not one word about supervised time sharing or a breaking period or any type of psychological evaluations or anything. So the question is why the gamesmanship? Why was that needed? Why did the kids have to go through that? Why did in this case, the dad have to go through it? We as attorneys have an incredible responsibility. I think we have a direct impact on our kids and their mental well-being, not to mention the children with, you know, special needs. So we've got to be cautious as attorneys on how we go from point A to point B in our consultations, you know, because we can make or break it. But you're absolutely right. Give the spouse the opportunity to raise the child. Not talking about 100%. Give him the opportunity or her the opportunity to manage the child's after school, bedtime, weekend routines. They might amaze you.
This is what I'm saying. And in my opinion, built into the system should be, here is a parenting plan. Now, why don't we call it a trial parenting plan? And as part of my point is, before we start with these parenting plans.
Yeah, but hold on. Therein lies the problem. Let's just say you and me. And let's say you have to walk out of the house and I have the child. And you're saying, let's do this trial parenting plan. You would say to your attorney, time out. Why should I have to have a trial parenting plan? Let David have the trial parenting plan. Why do I need a trial? I'm the parent. I was with the child 100% of the time, just like they were. Just because I'm out of the house because she wanted me out of the house, just because I went out of the house because he wanted me out of the house, does it put you in a better light than the other?
No, I understand. But what I'm saying, here's what it eliminates is the court, to start with, has to, for that family, have an idea of what the particular needs are for that child and for that family.
Of course. I was talking about a general situation.
Right, I understand. I'm saying, but that's not always the case. And then from that, let's say the parties say they reach an agreement or I, the court, rule. My point is, that plan should not become a finalized plan. It should be this. And then getting into substantial change and all this, why not leave the parties then for 90 days to demonstrate how that plan is really going to work for them? That way, if changes need to be made, the father says, I'm going to be there, I'm picking the child up at 6, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know what happens with our courts. We get a temporary time-sharing agreement, or just let's say a parent doesn't let the one parent see the child for 30, 60, 90, 120 days, and just to get some time-sharing, they agree to every other weekend, Friday to Sunday, just to get something.
I agree.
What are our courts? So then it's, let's buy some time. Let's do this for 6 months or a year. Then you finally get the final hearing. What does the judge say?
You've
been doing it for a year. Why change now?
You just made my point.
That's why the temporary sample test periods, people don't want to enter into them because it locks them in. It locks them in. And if our courts are going, because it says, you know, temporary time-sharing agreements aren't supposed to be prejudicial to the parent. Even if you put that language in there, they won't be prejudicial to the parent. Prejudicial to the parent.
No, what you just said is exactly my point, which is you make it impossible to really reach a temporary agreement.
Right.
My point is the court should start out with a wide open plan that applies for 90 days. Then at the end of the 90 days, if David isn't doing his part and Roger isn't doing his part, I can come in and the court can review this and say, Mr. Smith and Mrs. Smith, I gave you wide open, equal access, everything you need. She did it, he didn't. He did, you didn't. Now I'm going to change the plan based on the performance of what you guys have done on a trial period of 90 days.
That's an idea that should be discussed.
And we all start equally. Then if we get to the issue of time, we're costing time with all of these modifications. You're putting someone in a cast, as you just said, that you never come out of. You've been listening to A Lawyer's Edge. David Trotty and I are here each week at 2 to 3 o'clock, and you can visit us on Facebook as well, The Lawyer's Edge. Tune in next week. You're